10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
It's a live radio show, and I'm proud to announce that I'm wearing brand new arch supports for you. And now, Dr. Dave Weather.
Here he comes every damn night. It's Walter Sterling, and he's always right.
Tonight may be the best chance to view the Northern Lights since October 2024. You've never seen them, Northern Lights? Listen, a geomagnetic condition this Sunday night, late this Sunday night, will energize the Northern Lights, perhaps even visible to lower latitudes in the United States. The Space Weather Prediction Center says there is a small chance for G5 extreme levels. G3, G4, that's going to happen tonight, but G5 is extreme. I was driving home from work one night in Northwest New Jersey. This is when I was a kid. And I was working at this tiny radio station that was in a house, converted into a radio station in the woods of Northwest New Jersey. There is nothing in Northwest New Jersey. There wasn't anything then. There's nothing there now. Maybe a CVS that wasn't there. That's it. And this house was on the side of Route 31, a rural paved road, barely paved, that went through Northwest New Jersey. And I would leave there when I was done at about 10 o'clock. Now, my job at this radio station, which was a daytimer, I won't even bore you with what the hell that is, but it was a daytimer, radio people, daytimer. And my job was to do the last DJ shift before the sun went down and then go and cover local meetings for the news. I'd go to the school board meetings, the sewer meetings, the town meetings. I went to all of the meetings, and I covered them, and then I came back, and I left tape for the morning show. And then I drove home at about 9 or 10 o'clock at night. But from the radio station to the main highway was a good 25-minute drive, and then I hit Route 22 and drove east. And it was summer. And it was rural summer, country summer. The air was heavy and sweet, and that special combination of summer flowers and pine trees. And it was dark. Even on the highway, even with the lights, it was still dark. But I've always had great affection for arc lights on highways. Those beautiful, brilliant yellow arc lights at the way up there, way up at the top of the pole. And I'd look at them, and I'd look at them like they were stars. I had such romance about those lights. I thought they were beautiful. I imagine now they've been replaced by horrible LED lights. Is that right? 18-wheeler, are they being replaced? They've been replaced by LED lights. It's a tragedy, but the sulfur arc lights were beautiful lights to me. And the sky was magnificent. Not a cloud in the sky, just beautiful. And to me, it was a great privilege and spiritual to drive on those highways and to go home. It's a 50-mile drive. I had to drive for an hour and 15 minutes to get home. But I was in show business. Boy, I was in show business. And I was driving home, and I saw something in the sky that I'd never seen before. It was ethereal, spooky, beautiful, and overwhelming. From the horizon, as high up as I could see, were curtains and curtains of moving, shimmering, green light. Vertical light. And it moved very slowly, in an unnatural way, in a way I'd never seen before. It wasn't like a curtain. It was shaped like a curtain, but it didn't move like a curtain. It moved like light. And it was the Northern Lights. I didn't know it at the time. I wasn't prepared for it. I'm like, do we see the Northern Lights here in Jersey? And it was July, dead of July, heat, just magnificent. And I got to watch them for about 20 minutes. And I will never forget them. When you see the Northern Lights, which can be yellow, blue, green, or red. Oh, my gosh, red. It is a life-changing experience because you immediately realize, at least I did, that my problems are not important. My achievements are pleasant but not important. And there's something much bigger than me. There's something there that's much bigger than me. And tonight, my friend, tonight, in about an hour, go outside, look to the darkest place in the sky, the opposite side of the moon. Look in the dark. No, it's the north. Look, Northern Lights. Look north and relax. Get away from the ambient light as best you can. Maybe get to a golf course, a park, where there's no ambient light, or the shore of a lake, and look up and give yourself 5-10 minutes to see the Northern Lights. Our best chance since 2024 to see the Northern Lights is tonight. Is it 2024? Yeah, since October 2024, this was our best chance. It is worth the trouble with a small t to go and see the Northern Lights. It will change. It will change you. I've been on the radio a long time. I've never once said to you, you know, if you do something, this will completely change your life. When you see the Northern Lights, it will completely change your life. And when you do see them, call me. Share it. My number is 855-839-1210. Yeah, I'll give it to you again. 855-839-1210. I'm Walter M. Sterling. This is a live radio show, coast to coast. It's called Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
Serenity Bushy, 19, exotic dancer. In Florida, they changed the law in Florida that you can only be a stripper if you're 21 years old. Well, Serenity was 19 and is 19, and she found herself out of work. So she sued the state. And Serenity Bushy, by the way, is no longer suing. She stood down. I'm going to say this. If you're old enough to die for this country, if you can join the military, if you can join the police department, if you're somebody that is an adult in every way, except for getting a beer, weed in some states, or being able to dance in the nude, I say that's poppycock. This woman has the total right. She's able to vote. She's able to open a bank account. She's able to drive to Walmart. This woman can do anything. In fact, most restaurants allow a 19-year-old to serve alcohol, sometimes 18 years old, depending on the state you're in. I stand with Miss Bushy. She should be able to dance in Florida. There has to be many good states that would want Serenity Bushy to show up and dance naked for them. From the Champagne Room, this is Vilo Hool. Strippers on the loose, Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I tell the story of the garden variety stolen car that turned into a carjacking. coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Eat the blueberries after purchase. Details later. The people of Walmart, Sterling Every Damn Night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here. I noticed the crocheting has started again at our house, which only means one thing, gift-giving time.
Look, I crochet all year. It's just that, you know, there's nobody who works faster than a crocheter when you have a baby shower on the weekend.
Coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Public Shame Radio. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Good evening, Walter. I'm Sterling 18 Wheelers. Welcome. My phone number is 855-839-1210, and I look forward to talking to you whenever I trigger you. I know that this show has many triggers. There are many warning labels all over every directory of every station that carries this show, because so many things are triggered by this show, because I, the host, and the producers have ADHD. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. You know, it's the first ADHD show. Your grandfather may have told you about a show called Laugh-In, Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In in the late 60s. It was a show that had absolutely no plot, no theme, did not tell a story. For 1 hour, it told jokes, did bits, another bit. The bits lasted from 60 to 90 seconds. They were not connected in any way. That's this show. And because you're smart and clever, and your friends think you're the funny one, you'll have no trouble with this. I'm Walter Sterling. I'm live every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. on this radio station, this giant, important radio station. And then I'm available on the Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y, stupidest name for a company ever, but a great company. From 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Monday through Friday, Sterling Every Damn Night. See how that works? You know who is progressively screwed from the beginning to the end by how the grown-ups handled the pandemic? Kids. Kids have been screwed. I had a daughter, I still have a daughter, who was in high school, or last year of high school, the pandemic shut everything down. And she was a rules kid. I was not. My daughter was one of those kids who really looked forward to the homecoming dance and the prom and the class pictures and the individual yearbook pictures. She lived for that stuff, lived for it. The closing play, the competitions, the special awards. She lived for that. And she was denied that. She did not get a prom. She did not get a coming home dance. She did homecoming of the Mr. Biden homecoming dance. She didn't get any of that. The way her high school handled it, and it was a big high school, the way her high school handled it is, and the principal is pretty clever about that. The professional photographers who took the kids' class pictures, they went house to house to house and took pictures of the kid outside. They set up a set for the kid in the backyard. And instead of it being 5 seconds, it was a 25-minute process for each kid. And it was an 800-class senior class. But they did that for them, and good for him. But there was no prom, no homecoming, no formal graduation, no graduation in an auditorium, no graduation at all, as I recall. They didn't have a graduation at all. They mailed home the certificates. She was denied that. And then, when she had to go to college, it continued. She had to go to her private college 1 month ahead of every other kid and just sit in the dorm to be quarantined. Couldn't go out. Meals were brought to her dorm room. And then when classes started, they had their classes on Zoom. She's at a university away from home. She had her classes on Zoom at home in her dorm. She had her classes on Zoom in her dorm, not at home. Isolated, alone. You remember, if you went away to school, for any school, you remember what it was like your first semester away from home? You were homesick like crazy. And imagine being homesick like crazy and being isolated from your peers, stuck in a dorm room with your roommate. That was your social contact. And they would bring the meals to your room to prevent the terrible spread of this horrible thing. And if she left, if she was caught in the hall, it risked her scholarship. And if she said, well, listen, why don't I just take these Zoom classes at home? Why don't I just go home? She would have lost her scholarships. And there was a insane financial reason for that I will explain at another time. But she was screwed. But you know who else was screwed? I had a kid in who had determined to do killer work her junior year in high school to get the good grades to get into the college of her choice. And the minute she transferred from being in the classroom where she was straight A's because she decided to be, to having to learn on Zoom at home, she started flunking out. She started flunking out because she could not learn on Zoom. And in fairness to the teachers who did not decide to do it this way, in fairness to the teachers, they were never trained in teacher college to teach on Zoom. And kids were never taught to learn how to learn on Zoom. And then they both discovered something scary. The kid could turn off the camera. And suddenly there was no eye contact, no visual relationship with teachers if the kid decided to turn off the camera to go get a snack or to go watch Lilo and Stitch. That was the horror. My smart junior in high school kid, she started flunking out. She was ready to flunk out. And her school system came up with an ingenious way to make sure that she was going to graduate. And I'll share that with you coming up. They also came up with an ingenious way, better than anything I've ever heard, to recover, to make it up to the kids academically who were screwed by having to not go to school. Screwed. But it gets worse. Now there's this big push by the big employers where you must come back to the office. You must come back to the office, almost forgetting that the reason that their workers are not in the office is because they were ordered to go home. They didn't want to go home. They didn't go home to slack off. They were ordered to go home, and most of them didn't want to work from home. And then they made enormous accommodations, both in their home and with their families, which would allow them to work at home. And now they're saying, you must come back to the office. But in all of those articles and all that I've read about that, they're always leaving out one group of people. Those kids, young kids, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old kids in those homes, they're used to mommy and daddy being home all day. And now, congratulations, mommy and daddy have to go back to a building to do the same work. And the kid has to go to daycare. Whoa. I'm Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
It's Sterling Every Damn Sunday. It's radio turned at night. Each night when you should sleep, that's when Walter gets real deep. The bosses hate his show, and that's all you need to know.
Is the night you want to see the Northern Lights. Best chances of doing that since 2024. My gosh, that had to be 6 or 7 months ago. Your odds of seeing the Northern Lights tonight are really good. Mateus, and now our report from Hollywood. Hello?
Yes, how are you?
We have
Walter?
A jingle. Where's my jingle? No, you're not getting away with that. I'd like you to play that again so we can hear all of it in its majesty.
Boom, boom, hi. Hollywood, Sterling every damn night.
But hey, it's Boom Boom Hollywood. I know you're on a lot of very sloppy radio stations that would let that go, but I can't let that go. I once knew a horrible man who was programming a great-sounding radio station, but he was a horrible man, and he used to listen to every second of the station. He had an earphone, and he'd go to restaurants, and he'd have his earphone, and he was just horrible. But his station sounded great, but he was horrible. But I could never be like that. I, you know, what am I, Mike McVeigh? I'd never be like that. So what he would do is one time, this is true, he called this, and this was a huge radio station, and he called the disc jockey because the disc jockey had made a mistake. A record ended, the next event started, and what the disc jockey did between the two events was wrong. He calls him up, and he says to him, do it again. What? Do it again. And he made him play the song again, let it tail, do the break correctly, start the next song, and do it right. He did that on the freaking air.
Unbelievable.
Can you imagine? It is unbelievable. It's a horrible industry. Now, Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood, you reviewed the Karate Kid 8 or something. Which Karate Kid did you see? Was this Karate Kid 8? Which one was this? Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood is in California. He reviews movies for us every Sunday night, does a great job, shares with us real world perception of films that he has seen and shares his perceptions with you. And now I have done my job as a host to bring in New Cume. Please go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
This is the sixth, Walter, the sixth Karate Kid movie.
God.
And if we're going to call it a franchise, I don't know. I mean, the first four had Pat Morita as the great sensei that taught Ralph Macchio, at least in the first three. And they brought in Jackie Chan in 2010 after Pat Morita was no longer available except from a Ouija board. And then after that, they've given us this new movie, which is Karate Kid Legends. And that's what I saw this week. That opened Friday. It's doing fair at the box office. Not great. We'll get into that in just a moment. But Jackie Chan returns. There's a young boy named the actor's Ben Wang. He plays Li Fong, who his mother doesn't want him to learn karate, but they moved to New York, and he's going to try and stay away fighting, but he just can't quite do it. There's a lovely girl he falls in love with at a local pizza parlor. Her name is Sadie Stanley, the actress. You've seen her in Somewhere in Queens as the smart young teen girl. She's really great in that show. Anyway, he falls for this girl, and yet right next to the pizza parlor, there is a karate shop where there's a bad kid that just has a chip on his shoulder, wants to fight anyone. His name is Connor, played by Aramis Knight. And so he's going to get in fights anyway. Mother's upset, but Jackie comes from Japan and tries to straighten things out, and then feels that he has to train him further and go all the way to California to get Ralph Macchio to come back, Daniel LaRusso once again. And poor Ralph, he's doing great. I mean, collecting the royalties on six movies now. But there you have it. That's basically what happens in the movie. It was entirely predictable, but it might be fun for young kids. And it was nice to see a lot of the old timers there. And if you stay after the credits, Walter, you'll even get to see something very special. So if you'll wait after the credits, if you're in the Karate Kid mood and you really like the nostalgia for the early 80s Karate Kid movies, wax on, jacket on, I should say, as in the garment of clothing, then this is the movie for you to watch this weekend.
The actress, the girl.
Yeah.
Is she over 18?
Actress. You know, I think she's in her early 20s.
So is she nude in this movie? Is she ever nude? Does she ever shower or anything? Does the Karate Kid walk in on her in the bath?
No. But he does plant a kiss on her. He does get to plant a kiss on her. But that's about as far as it goes, sadly. But, you know, you'll leave it the rest to your imagination. She's a fun young actress. I think you'll like it. You know, earlier today, you said something that had me completely mesmerized. And when you were talking about the Northern Lights and how life-changing they can be. Now, here in Southern California, we can't see those, really. The most we ever get is something like that, is a rainbow every now and then. But I had an experience when I was out on a cruise ship for the first and only time. And I saw myself there in the middle of the the Pacific, going to Alaska. And I just felt so infinitesimal in comparison to the great ocean and the wonder of the passing scenery, always changing the way the light reflected on the water. And yet I was alone. I was like the only guy on deck. Everyone else was either smoking or in the casino gambling. And I could not understand why the heck people have this beauty of nature in front of them, and they're doing something they could do at home or in a casino or somewhere else. They're in the middle of the ocean. Look at this natural beauty. And you just felt so impressed by nature as you described the Northern Lights tonight. And I hope at some point before they cart me off to the Daffodil Home for the Serene, I'll get to see the Northern Lights the way you described them tonight.
Do you think they would think you're serene?
Well, by the time.
Is that what you said? Really? Okay. All right, listen, this is Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood. How do we find you on Facebook?
MATIASBOMBAL Hollywood on Facebook. It's Mateus Bumballs Hollywood. One more time, MATIASBOMBAL Hollywood on Facebook, Walter.
Walter M. Sterling, good evening. Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood. The way songs get on the radio is they test them. They put them put people in a meeting room at a Hyatt, 300-500 people, 100 people, and they play them the songs. And they ask, do you like it, hate it, sort of like it? That's a bad program director. Good program director does what I did. Do you love it, hate it, sick of it, don't know it? That's it. Those are the only choices. If you heard this on the radio, would you turn up the volume, change the station, don't know it, sick of it? Those are the choices I'd give. And I was programming a station in San Francisco. And we were picking the songs and picking. And finally, I said, why don't we do a sort where we pull out the people in the groups who are gay and see if there's any difference between the preferences of gay listeners and non-gay listeners. See if there are any songs that gay people like more than not, and we will play them more because it's San Francisco. And it turns out that out of 500 songs, there were two songs that scored way above the general population in preference for gay listeners. You want to know what they were? I'll tell you in just seconds. This is Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
Lesbians in space. My dad, he always asks, every time he sees a gay couple, he'll go, who's the man one? Who's the man one? He'll even do it if it's two men. He'll go, who's the man one with those men? And I had to take him aside. I was like, hey, you got to stop doing that. And he goes, because it's not PC. And I was like, well, take that out of it. At least like 6 out of 10 times, it's visually obvious, okay?
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I tell the story of the garden variety stolen car that turned into a carjacking. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Eat the blueberries after purchase. Details later. The people of Walmart, Sterling Every Damn Night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here. I noticed the crocheting has started again at our house, which only means one thing, gift-giving time.
Look, I crochet all year. It's just that, you know, there's nobody who works faster than a crocheter when you have a baby shower on the weekend.
Coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Damn Night on wonderful WPHT.
Do we have a jingle here? Why am I always asking for my jingles? Where's the J.B. Bakery jingle? No, I said I do want to play it.
Feel the dough, eat the dough.
Good to argue with me.
J.B. Bakery, Salida and Steve, Sterling Every Damn Night.
Because it's the best jingle we have. That's why. The best jingle. J.B. Bakery is a bakery in Burlington, New Jersey. Tight as a drum, I'll tell you. in Burlington, New Jersey. It's run by Steve Salina, and now they have an eater and a greeter named Father Jim Drucker, who's an actual retired Catholic priest who was the official Navy chaplain during Desert Storm. And he's a retired Catholic priest. And the reason that I like him and the reason that he's on the air, it's not because I am a Catholic of some variety, but because before he was a Catholic priest, he was one of the greatest top 40 disc jockeys alive. Very often when people go into things like the priesthood, it's because they failed at some secular job. But in Jim's case, he did not fail. He was one of the most successful top 40 disc jockeys alive, and then he got a calling. So at the top of his game and the top of his income, he went to serve Christ. And I respect you for that, Jim. But mostly I respect for what a great top 40 disc jockey you were on WAR freaking M. WARM in the Poconos in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And then we have Salina. Now, Salina is the de facto manager of JB Bakery, which makes phenomenal baked goods, incredible baked goods. And they don't pay me for this. I'm not paid for this because I'm a complete and total idiot. And but I'm happy to share the time because I respect young entrepreneurs. They're owning a retail shop, but mostly Salina is up to be Miss New Jersey in the Miss America pageant. Are you Miss New Jersey yet, Salina?
I'm not Miss New Jersey yet, but in 9 days, I will be at the hotel for 5 days competing. So on the 14th, we will know whether or not I am Miss New Jersey. And I know I have a lot of people rooting for me. Someone tells me every day, oh, you've got to win. So now I have to win. I have to.
What do you have to do? Share what you have to do during the next 9 days to lock it down as Miss New Jersey in the Miss America pageant.
So I've got a rehearsal tomorrow, and I've got to rehearse all of my routines that I've personally prepared to show the judges. I have to get ready for a 10-minute private interview, so I will be speaking with them for 10 minutes. There's 7 judges, so I'll be standing in front of the panel. And then I have to perform all of my routines on stage for 2 preliminary competitions and then a final night. And then if I have the most points, I win Miss New Jersey.
What are your routines?
So we all have an opening number, and we all do like a college number or your careers where you, it's kind of like an intermission. So everybody's in those 2 numbers, and then I'm competing in talent. So I'm doing ballet. I'm doing the Cupid variation for my talent, in evening gown, in a fitness competition, and also an onstage question.
Do you know who the judges are?
I don't know who the judges are. I've heard we're going to be meeting them on Tuesday, the 10th, which is when we arrive at the hotel. We have a whole day of activities planned, and I'm pretty sure we're going to be meeting them that day. I know there are 7 of them.
Can you find out who they are?
So I heard that one of them kind of leaked it on Facebook, and I've had a couple of people follow me that I don't know and aren't really connected with anybody that I know, and I think that some of them might be the judges, but I can't say for certain.
Is there a way to find out? Is this a Google thing? Can you find this out? I can't imagine it'd be that hard to find out who the judges are. It'd be impossible to find out what the questions are going to be. That I understand. But I'll bet you a little work you could find out who the judges are. Plus, you're in Jersey. You must know somebody.
It's true. I've definitely got to put my Jersey detective skills to work.
Yeah. It's usually one phone call that your mother can make. All right, this is Salina. We hope that Salina is the Miss New Jersey and the Miss America pageant. Father Jim Drucker, have you been helping these young people? Because you stand in the JB Bakery, scarfing up free food, and then greeting people when they come in. How is this going for you?
All I can tell you is I am in heaven. Pardon the pun intended. I'm sitting at a marble table. Walter, a marble table. You set me on a mission. I accomplished it. And Salina was just wonderful coming in, and Steve and the young people working there. It's sensational. I'm just in heaven.
Father Jim Drucker, you can meet him at the JB Bakery. There's a lot of trouble in the lobby. And when I realized that there were trouble in the lobby, I said to Steve, the owner, I said, you can't come on this show again until you fix up that lobby. He had applique on the table that was coming off. It was a wobbly table. This is a bakery. The lobby is your wrapping. That is the wrapping. When somebody walks into that bakery, it has to be pristine. It has to be warm. You can't have ugly blue and conduit wires hanging from the ceiling. What the heck are you thinking? So until he fixes the lobby of JB Bakery, he's not allowed on Sterling on Sunday again. He's not allowed again.
Walter, we're working on color, pastel. I'm sharing with him. I'm thinking, giving him my thought process for pastel colors, light colors, because the blue there, I agree with you.
The worst color to get near food is blue. That is the worst color you can have. You don't see any food wrappings in blue. I'm Walter M. Sterling. I'm glad we've settled this, but Steve can come on when he fixes the lobby. Thank you, Selena. Thank you, Father Drucker. Sterling every damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
I've shaved my legs for you. Wink, wink. And now, Dr. Dave Weather.
Here he comes every damn night. It's Walter Sterling, and he's always right. Hey, 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 it's Sterling, Sterling, Sterling. When he comes on the air, the misfits love it, but the bosses get scared. Hey, 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 it's Sterling, Sterling, Sterling every damn night, he's not the young generation, but he's always right. He's not all that friendly, but he can talk all right. So be here, here for Sterling, Sterling, Sterling every damn night.
It's true what the song says. The bosses hate this show. You know how I know they hate this show? We have killer ratings. Absolutely slam dunk, double digit share ratings, or in the words of my boss, quote, no one's even close. And you would figure, and maybe you feel this way at work too. You do a good job, you nail it, you've given tasks, the results are what they expect or better. And then silence. Not a phone call, not a note. Good job, terrific. Raise, bonus, here's a car, we'll barter whatever you want. None of it. None of it. Because what they've done is given me a red carpet to take my wares someplace else. They've said, in their silence, we don't care about your show. We don't care about your ratings. We don't care what you're doing. It's revolutionary. It's different, unique. It's innovative. Congratulations. We don't care. That's the messaging. That's what I sit with. And I bet you do, too. Because there's this fatal flaw in the thinking of most managers who come out of sales. Not the ones who come out of content creation or manufacturing or having made something original or designed something. Because the people who make stuff, we're working as hard as we can. We can't work harder. If you and I are creating from scratch anything, whether it's potholders or hats or automobiles or radio shows or whatever, you and I can't work harder. We don't know how. If our name's on it and it's a creation, we're doing our best all the time. But if you come out of sales management, you believe that if you give your salespeople a lot of compliments, they'll take advantage of you. They'll demand more money. They won't work any harder. They're going to demand more. They want more. That's true of many salespeople, and it's not a bad thing. But it's the opposite of creative people. I'll tell you a pathetic thing about myself. When I first went on the air in New York City, there was the president of, I was at NBC, there was a president of the company named Jack Thayer. And there was nothing about Jack I really liked, but he was a big fellow and he had big stuff. He heard my show one Sunday. He wrote me a handwritten note. Walter, heard your show. Terrific. Fantastic. Keep up the good work. On your side, Jack Thayer. I still have it. I would do anything for Jack Thayer. Anything. I've always had a good relationship with other people on the radio. That's because I always go out of my way to tell them how good they sound. I remember something good they did, and I tell them right away. Because we work for applause. I'm sitting here alone. You're in your car alone. I'm 14 inches from the mic. You're 14 inches from the speaker. This is a remarkable relationship, but we're alone. And we're performers on the radio. And we live for applause. We live for applause. Listen, tonight, you get to applaud your higher power. Tonight, there's going to be a rare chance to see the Northern Lights right now, from now all night, because there's going to be a severe geomagnetic condition, likely tonight, which will energize the Northern Lights. The Northern Lights, you're going to be able to see them tonight, perhaps even visible at the lower latitudes in the United States. The Space Weather Prediction Center. Can you imagine working at the Space Weather Prediction Center? Space Weather Prediction Center. They say there is a small chance for a G5 level, an extreme level. Whoa. I mentioned that I worked at a radio station in San Francisco. I worked with a radio station in San Francisco. And all music stations test their songs. And in one of the tests, I said, why don't we test and pull out a separate sort? You know what researchers call it, a separate sort. To see if the gay members of the test like some songs more than the general population. And I said, what? Let's see if there are any that they like. And then we'll play them. More because it's San Francisco. And because I know how to get ratings and it's a lost art. No, I'm just kidding. Many know how to get ratings. I love them all. And it turns out of 500 songs, there were exactly two songs that the gay members of the population of this test group liked better, quite a bit better than the general population. And one of them, oh, you'll never guess it, was Over the Rainbow by Judy Garland. And the other was this. You ready? You got your kazoo? Did you get it? Here we go. It's a kazoo song.
And my high top shoes and my hair piled high up on my head.
I went to lose a jolly hour on the trolley and lost my his bright green tie. He was quite the handsomest of men. I started to yell, so I counted to ten, then I counted to ten again. Clang, clang, clang went the trolley. Ding, ding, ding went the bell. Sing, sing, sing went my heartstrings.
For the moment I saw him, I fell.
Chug, chug, chug went the motor. Bump, bump, bump went the brake. Thump, thump, thump went my heartstrings.
When his he tipped his hat and took a swing.
He said he hoped he hadn't stepped up on my feet. He asked my name, I held my breath.
I couldn't speak because he said he had to tell.
Buzz, buzz, buzz went the buzzer.
It's Pride. It's Pride Month. Let's celebrate.
Stop, stop, stop.
No, no, not a bunch of lions.
As he started to lead, I took hold of his sleeve with my hand. And as if it were planned, he stayed on with me, and it was grand just to stand with his hand holding mine. To the end of the line.
All right, now play it, play it.
the buzzer. Plop, plop, plop went the wheels. Stop, stop, stop went my heartstrings.
But my favorite part.
He
here we go.
Started to leave. I could call him asleep with my hand. And as if it were planned, he stayed on with me. And it was grand just to stand with his hand holding mine.
Oh my God, listen to you. Congratulations. Good job. Fantastico, fantastico. Walter M. Sterling, look at you. And there was something else I had to tell you before we did this, an unbelievably important thing. Oh my God, what was it? Yeah, okay. Walter M. Sterling, Facebook, Walter Sterling. And you can see Selena from Selena JB Bakery. She's on my Facebook page now, and you can look at the website, which is Walter Sterling Show. Download your Midnight Misfit card. Oh my gosh, so much more for you. And coming up, the three things, and it only takes three things, that'll make you and me more likable. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Gaffneys, meet the Gaffneys. They live in a 150-year-old house. They've got kids, we don't have time to name them all. Sometimes Dan and Becky like to bicker, and it's always good for a snicker. When you're with the Gaffneys, you know it's Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. It's Sterling every damn night. Ah!
I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
And we're here to tell you stories of living with our eight children in our old house. A lot of crocheting going on in the home with you and the girls.
I like to give homemade gifts.
Do you think people like receiving homemade gifts?
Okay, so back in the day, I used to get really self-conscious about my homemade gift giving because I know some people just look at it, toss it to the side, and never look at it again. But what I feel, have discovered, have come to terms with now is people have so many parties for their kids, baby showers, bridal showers, then we have sprinkles, and we have divorce parties. We have every ridiculous kind of party that we can have to celebrate ourselves and get gifts. And even if you say no gifts, you still mean, okay, it's fine if you bring a gift, but I'm just going to say that because we don't need a gift. And everything, whether it's going to be my homemade blanket, my bath, baskets, something that I built, something that I spent days on, it's going in the landfill, just like the super cute little gift from Target that you have so many of that your kid doesn't even get a chance to wear it. So why not make my own gift? And I guarantee you, I spend more money on the yarn or the fabric or whatever it is that I'm using, then add my time into it, than the other people who just bring something that they've picked up that looks super perfect off of somebody's registry.
When Father's Day rolls around, can I get a pair of homemade shorts?
If you want to pull out the sewing machine and make them, sure, honey. Oh,
you put so much work into it, though. Wouldn't it be easier just to go to the store? 5 minutes, you got the gift.
Certainly, it would be easier. But again, it's like I said, it's going to end up in the landfill, or I'm going to put my time and my effort into it, and I'm going to enjoy knowing that I gave the kid or the person something that I care about, even if they don't.
Well, at least I guess the stuffed animals and the blankets are practical.
Practical, cute. And at least I get a little joy out of it, too. Is that selfish of me? Gift giving in a selfish way? I don't know. I'll post a picture of it when it's all done and given away on my Instagram page. If you want to follow me, you can find me at Just Being Mom.
And I'm on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show. Dan and Becky, Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I tell the story of the garden variety stolen car that turned into a carjacking. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
Eat the blueberries after purchase. Details later. The people of Walmart. Sterling every damn night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
He
He's the master of the radio. He's even got his own show. There's nothing that he doesn't know. It's Sterling every damn night. His studio is the laundry room. He isn't into gloom and doom. You cannot call him on Zoom. It's Sterling every damn night. Observant, conversant, very fervent. So put on your radio and warm up some hot cocoa, 'cause things are about to get loco on Sterling every damn night.
All right, from coast to coast on I-80, I-90, up and down the Florida coast on I-4, welcome. This is Sterling Every Damn Night, Michael Ewing's radio station in the woods of Florida. Welcome, Paul Vandenberg, my buddy in Albany. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for your sweet notes. And Charlie Green and his kid had a great sporting event this weekend, and I hope to talk to Charlie and his son this week. Charlie Green's kid decided to become a professional boxer, wrestler, and that's an amazing transition, and I want to hear how the kid did. And Neil Paul actually had dinner with his parents. I can't believe that. It's an unusual thing to see. Neil Paul's kid had dinner with him. Neil Paul, our great friend. Now, listen, I know that you go to many places where you're pressured to try bubble tea. I'm going to share with you an ugly fact that I realized this weekend when I was again said, why don't you try the bubble tea? And I'm like, I don't want to try the bubble tea ever again. And then I decided to myself in my internal monologue that it is not racist to admit that I don't like bubble tea. You can admit you don't like bubble tea and it's not racist. And then I just had the best damn vacation. Oh my God. My wife went out of town for a week and she went out of town to earn money. I was alone with my kids, with two of my daughters. But my wife wasn't here. You know what that means? The towel stayed on the floor as long as I wanted it to stay on the floor. And no, I didn't clean that up because I decided that I didn't need to clean it up. I did do some wash. I did towels and my underwear. That's it. And you know what that meant? I didn't get crap for putting the wrong things in the dryer. Men suffer when we put things in the dryer. Because no matter what we put in, unless it's our underwear, it's wrong. And we will hear about it. It's wrong. The best app. You hear about all these apps. I'm going to share with you the best app. You will thank me. You ready? You want to download the Mr. Softy app. Why? The Mr. Softy app shows you in real time where the Mr. Softy truck is near you. That's useful. But what's cute and clever is you click on one of the trucks, one of the icons, showing where it is, and it'll tell you the name of the driver and how long that truck has been in service. Could there be a better app? The Mr. Softy app. Are they paying me for this? No. Why aren't they paying me for this? Because I'm an idiot. Welcome, my Midnight Misfits. Neil Paul, Judy Paul, the Datz family, welcome. Beryl Kravitz, Catherine Archer, Catherine Arthur, two different people, keep track. Rebecca Canner, hey Rebecca, and all my dear close friends listening on KMOX in St. Louis. Wait, this show is on KMOX? Did the really serious people in talk radio know about this? Are you up to date on all of this? Yes. And I'm going to tell you in seconds exactly what one school system is doing for those kids to repair the pandemic.
All news, more news, day and night around the clock, it's all news. You get it all when you set your dial.
Walter M. Sterling live on a Sunday night from coast to coast from WGAN in Maine, Phil Zachary's Kingdom, Phil's Kingdom, one of the greatest general managers I've ever known, to the West Coast. Sacramento, the number one radio station in Sacramento, KFBK, KMOX in between, KDKA in between WPHT in Philadelphia, Odyssey's biggest talk station. We're on all these big 50,000-watt important radio stations. You know why? Because at this time, management is sound asleep. They're working off that drink from the golf course. They're not with us right now. They're completely gone.
I put Walter on. Who cares?
It was pretty much a decision that went like that. Put Walter on. Who cares? Thank you. Thank you for not caring and sharing us with America. Live radio show. The 5, the 101. Driving through Dallas. Welcome. This is Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
Gaffneys, meet the Gaffneys. They live in a 150-year-old house. They've got 8 kids. We don't have time to name them all. Sometimes Dan and Becky like to bicker, and it's always good for a snicker. When you're with the Gaffneys, you know it's Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. It's Sterling every damn night.
I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
And we're here to tell you stories of living with our 8 children in our old house. A lot of crocheting going on in the home with you and the girls.
I like to give homemade gifts.
Do you think people like receiving homemade gifts?
Okay, so back in the day, I used to get really self-conscious about my homemade gift giving because I know some people just look at it, toss it to the side, and never look at it again. But what I feel, have discovered, have come to terms with now is people have so many parties for their kids, baby showers, bridal showers, then we have sprinkles, and we have divorce parties. We have every ridiculous kind of party that we can have to celebrate ourselves and get gifts. And even if you say no gifts, you still mean, okay, it's fine if you bring a gift, but I'm just going to say that because we don't need a gift. And everything, whether it's going to be my homemade blanket, my bath, baskets, something that I built, something that I spent days on, it's going in the landfill, just like the super cute little gift from Target that you have so many of that your kid doesn't even get a chance to wear it. So why not make my own gift? And I guarantee you, I spend more money on the yarn or the fabric or whatever it is that I'm using, then add my time into it, than the other people who just bring something that they've picked up that looks super perfect off of somebody's registry.
When Father's Day rolls around, can I get a pair of homemade shorts?
If you want to pull out the sewing machine and make them, sure, honey.
You put so much work into it, though. Wouldn't it be easier just to go to the store? 5 minutes, you got the gift.
Certainly, it would be easier. But again, it's like I said, it's going to end up in the landfill, or I'm going to put my time and my effort into it, and I'm going to enjoy knowing that I gave the kid or the person something that I care about, even if they don't.
Well, at least I guess the stuffed animals and the blankets are practical.
Practical, cute. And at least I get a little joy out of it, too. Is that selfish of me? Gift giving in a selfish way? I don't know. I'll post a picture of it when it's all done and given away on my Instagram page. If you want to follow me, you can find me at Just Being Mom.
And I'm on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show. Dan and Becky, Sterling every damn night.
We love the Gaffneys so much. It was so nice we played it twice from Sterling every damn Sunday. All right, now listen. The people who have suffered the most because of the pandemic are kids. The kids in school had their education screwed up for 2 years. Kids who had never done homeschooling, home studying, all of a sudden were at the dining room table with mom's laptop, who needed it back to do work, on Zoom with half of their friends with their cameras off, and teachers who had no experience teaching with Zoom. Well-meaning, most teachers cared a lot, but they'd never been trained on how to teach on Zoom. They still had trouble with overheads. They still had trouble with projectors in the classroom. And now they're supposed to teach on Zoom. Kids got screwed. And any kid with any slightest learning disability, any particular challenge, you take them out of a one-on-one with a teacher, there's no breaks. There's no control. Those kids were screwed. Socially, no proms. No class pictures. No homecoming dances. No graduation ceremonies. My oldest kid is a rules kid. She likes all that stuff. I hated all this. But she loved it. And she was cheated. And then she was cheated once she got to be a freshman in college away from home. She had to sit in her dorm for a month or two or three, quarantined, because she came from the wrong state. This was a horrible experience. Many kids who were doing A's and B's in high school suddenly were flunking out. Their grades were screwed up forever. Their GPA was screwed up forever because of this nonsense. There was no need for those kids to be kept at home. None. There was no need for it. But what scares me more is since the pandemic has ended, I have heard almost nothing about any remedial work that any public school system is doing to fix it, to get the kids back in line academically, to have learned. What'd you learn? What'd you learn about teaching kids on Zoom? I've seen no reports, no studies, no conversations, no interviews with teachers or principals or superintendents saying, this is what we learned about teaching kids on Zoom. And we learned some good things. There are some things about it that are good. We learned that kids are obsessed with their phone. Woo-woo! The smart schools are saying, well, if they're learning, if they're fixed on their phone, why don't we put the curriculum on their phones? Instead, 90% of the school systems, run by a-holes, have decided to make the telephone a source of punishment. You cannot bring your phone into school. You have to check it in outside. You have to keep it outside. Why? They're there. They're watching the phone. Why don't you put your damn curriculum on the phone? Put your curriculum on the phone. Throughout history, for the past 20 years, every time there's new tech, it's demonized by the public school systems. Do you know what hell it was to get a television set into most public school classrooms? And most of them still don't have it. For years, there were companies that said, we'll put the TVs in here. Oh, no, 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 no. They wouldn't put TVs in. And on and on and on. But I've done the homework on this, and I have found one school system whose superintendent agreed to talk to me about what they have done to help kids who are otherwise just fine and smart take their unique skills and the need for an innovative and different way to learn and put it into the curriculum of a public school, not a private school, not a special ed school, God love them, but in a public school. And you and I are going to talk to Dr. David Glasner. Dr. David Glasner is the superintendent of a school system that has come up with an unbelievably clever way to deal with kids who learn outside of the rails. And it's something I think when you hear about it, you're going to go to your school system and say, we need this. That's coming up in just seconds. Sterling, every damn Sunday. Dr. David Glasner is the superintendent of the Shaker Heights, Ohio School District. And if you and I know anything about the state of Ohio, they have very profound and serious points of view about education. The innovative center for what? Personalized learning, right?
That's correct.
Okay. The Innovative Center for Personalized Learning. On a given day, how many students are there?
It usually hovers somewhere around 60 or so students, though it fluctuates over the course of the year. But in terms of the number of students who are physically present in the building, that varies actually quite a bit depending on what day of the week and what part of the day you maybe are at the IC or the Innovative Center. And the reason for that is because every student who is there is experiencing a slightly different learning pathway. So we may have some students there who take some of their courses at the high school main campus. Maybe they're in the marching band, or they take an advanced placement class in person, or some other type of course that they want to take at the main campus. And then they complete the rest of their day at the IC. We have some students who are doing learning experiences outside of the school district, internships or apprenticeships or other kind of career exploration opportunities. So they may be outside of the IC for part of the day. And then we have students doing a mix of in-person learning and virtual learning, you know, kind of a hybrid approach to education. So, you know, it actually, one of the things that I find always striking about the IC is that it is just a little more flexible in terms of when students are physically in the building. Of course, we also know that students are learning all the time throughout the day, even when they're not physically present in the IC space.
What you just said, that last sentence, is the most innovative sentence I've ever heard out of a school administrator, which is, well, of course we know they're learning all day. They're absorbing things all day, whether they're in a classroom or not. That's a brave statement. Your peers, your colleagues in the business, how would they react to that?
You know, I think one of the things that as educators, I think a lot of educators try to do is to reimagine or re-envision what education could look like as we move forward. And we know, you know, a lot of our traditional schools are built, were built for a different type of economic model, you know, kind of more of a factory model where students are maybe going through a very circumscribed or a set of experiences. And I think, you know, it would, I think for a lot of my colleagues, the idea of trying to reimagine education may not be new. The way that we're doing at the IC might be a little bit different. The one other thing I would add to that question is I think there is a growing consensus among educators of the importance of preparing students to enter and be active contributors to the workforce, whether that's locally, regionally, nationally, or even internationally. And we know with technology and artificial intelligence and other advancements that the world of work and the world that our students will be entering when they leave our school buildings is probably very different than it was when we experienced it, or even than what it is right now in the status quo. And so getting students to learn outside of classroom walls is a key part of preparing students to really experience all the innovations that are happening in the world at a very quick pace and being prepared to help participate in those innovations once they graduate.
Out of 2,000 kids at any given time, you take in 60, 70, 80 into the IC. But what are some of the determining factors of how a kid goes from the main high school to the IC?
The factors really vary. We have students at the IC who simply want to try out a different learning pathway. Maybe they're interested in exploring a career path or a specific subject area that maybe isn't as accessible at our main high school. At our IC, we have what we call passion projects. It's part of the learning experience. And so for students who have a specific idea in mind of something they want to explore in more depth, that could be one reason why they go to the IC. We also have students who maybe have some anxiety around being in our main campus, or who are navigating other health and well-being types of issues. Those could be mental health and well-being types of concerns, social, emotional, or physical mental health and physical health and well-being concerns. And the IC is just a better place or more appropriate place for those students to succeed and thrive. We also have students who are struggling at the main campus and maybe are credit deficient, or maybe have challenges with attendance, and we have found that the IC might be a better and more supportive environment for those students. Typically, students get to the IC in one of two ways. It's possible we have students or families who come to us every year who say, hey, I've heard about the IC. I think it might be something I'm interested in. Can I learn more? We also have school counselors or teachers or others who sometimes recommend that students go to the IC. So you can kind of be nominated or self-nominate. But either way, we try to provide those opportunities for students when we know that there is interest.
One or two suggestions about setting this up. One or two things you wish you had known at the beginning that you now know that might be helpful to other educators who are exploring it and considering setting it up.
I would like to remind my past self that innovation has fits and starts. It's not a linear trajectory. There are some things that we tried out at the very beginning of the IC that were amazing, that were successful right from jump. And there were other things that just didn't work out as well. First of all, the way the online learning platforms that we've used has changed a little bit over the course of time. I think also this idea of personalized learning could be a little more challenging, and how we prepare students to participate in that type of learning experience. I think we have come to appreciate that there is a lot of groundwork that has to be done with students when they get to the IC, kind of onboarding, if you will, to prepare them for this different kind of learning environment, in order for them to really understand it and to be successful. So we've put a lot of effort into making sure that that transition when students come to the IC is a smooth and supportive one. I would really encourage folks who are embarking on this journey to really let students take the lead. And what I mean by that, I mean from a practical perspective, you know, really make sure that students' voice and choice is part of their design of their learning pathway. That should be, right? We want students to be interested and engaged in what they're learning and what they're exploring.
That's David Glasner, superintendent of the Shaker Heights School System, talking about the innovative IC, which is getting kids who were screwed by the pandemic back on track. They love it. You can reach him at Glasner, G-L-A-S-N-E-R, G-L-A-S-N-E-R, underscore D, at shaker.org. G-L-A-S-N-E-R, underscore D, as in David, at shaker.org. And you can send me a note if you'd like more information too, because it works. It is brilliant. It's easy. And he did it in a public school system. What could be harder than doing something innovative, creative, that works in a public school system? And David Glasner, superintendent of the Shaker Heights Public Schools, pulled it off. Really impressed. Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
I don't know about you, but I'm mighty relieved that Taylor Swift now owns her originals again. She got them from her dad. And now, Dr. Dave's weather.
Sailing every night, lost in space.
Well, I have some really good news for you, Dave. Would you like to hear it?
I would love to hear some good news.
A study in the British Journal of Psychology has uncovered an unexpected link between intelligence and happiness. While frequent social interaction tends to boost life satisfaction for most people, the opposite holds true for those with higher intelligence. Researchers found that highly intelligent individuals often feel less satisfied when socializing too frequently. Instead, they tend to prefer solitude, deep focus, meaningful goal-oriented pursuits over casual interactions. This aligns with what's called the Savannah Theory of Happiness, which suggests our brains still respond to social settings shaped by evolutionary history, and that smarter individuals are better equipped to navigate modern environments with fewer social dependencies. Therefore, the solitude that you and I seek, the introversion that we have suffered from our whole lives, is because we're smarter than those other people.
Well, at least it has nothing to do with looks and fashion.
No, because there's nobody in radio who's in radio for their looks.
That's why they say we have faces for radio, Walt.
Now, Dave, do you have... Oh, but first, Dave's in Canada. And you realize that Canada is inflicting wildfire smoke on the lower 48 this past week. Are you aware of how serious it is now?
Yes, and for once it's not in British Columbia. Yeah, it's in Manitoba where it's absolutely horrific, where even the military is sending in C-130 Hercules is to evacuate people, and God bless those people. I've been in an evacuation order before where I live here in the Cariboo region of British Columbia back in 2017, and every day wondering and not knowing if you're going to come home to it. Your home intact or your home burnt down is absolutely a horrific feeling. So my thoughts and prayers from somebody who's experienced it, it goes out to all of those people. And I apologize, being Canadian, for all the forest fire smoke you guys are getting, but hopefully they could get it under control soon.
Why can't you Canadians manage your wood?
Oh, Walter, that's such a loaded question. Such a loaded question.
Do you have updates for us on metaphysics and UFOs? Go ahead.
No, I'm going to answer that this way. And I might be a little controversial here.
Thank God.
When you have a government that is climate change driven, there's a lot of bureaucracy and pundits out there who are experts with forest fighting fires. Big fires continue to build a argument that climate change is necessary rather than the equipment that Canada and the Canadian government handicaps us with in order to get the fires out. And this is just an opinion. There's no fact or proof behind this. But I know here in British Columbia, where friends of mine run the local airport where the helicopters land during our forest fire season, and the stories that those helicopter pilots have relayed through them, it's unconscionable the amount of bureaucracy that goes around a forest fire and how many aircraft are bombing it. Here's one thing that I will say about Canada. We have one of the largest or a couple of the largest water bombing fleets in the world. And yet a lot of those aircraft, especially from a company called Coulson Water Bombing, is not allowed to use their equipment in Canada because they buy former military jets and helicopters out of the United States, and former military aircraft are not allowed to be used and transformed into forest fire fighting gear. Whereas if you go to California or anywhere else that burns quite a bit in the U.S., they are using all means necessary to put the fires out. Problem is, in California, they have a lack of water outside of the ocean. We don't have a lack of water here. When you have a helicopter that is dropping 600 gallons from a net, whereas you could be getting giant water bombers that could be transformed into dropping loads of retardant and water on these fires at the exact same time, I think there is too much bureaucracy, and that's why we see so many super fires these days, at least over the last 12 years.
Dave Scott is a Canadian, live on Sterling every damn Sunday. Dave is an expert on UFOs, metaphysics, Bigfoot, and all things Canadian. Do you have an update for us tonight, Mr. Scott?
Well, I know you have been very interested, along with the Midnight Misfits, regarding my investigation into an area that we call Flight 21, where in 1965, a plane crashed, killing 52 people. And in that location, we've had everything from UFO sightings, alien sightings, UFO landings, Sasquatch encounters, etc. And I've been filling you in on my investigation out there. And we went back to the location last night, Mr. Number One. And let me tell you, it was creepy.
Really?
It was absolutely creepy. Now, one of the things that Sasquatch allegedly does is hits you with what they call infrasound. This is when you're approaching a Sasquatch area, and it could be within a couple of miles, all of a sudden you start getting headaches. You start getting almost feeling very heavy, hard to breathe. And the three of us that went up there started feeling that about 2 miles away from the location. And when we got up to the location, it allowed us to breathe a little bit easier. We were up there for about 4.5 hours. And up until it started getting dark. And right now up here, it doesn't start getting dark until about 10 o'clock at night. And let me tell you, last night we had noises going on. We could hear what we thought were some sort of creature walking through the forest. And we heard voices of people. We heard what we thought was what we call samurai chatter, which is what is nicknamed for the speaking of what a Sasquatch sounds like when they talk. We had so much activity last night. We are going to be reviewing the tapes that we have in order to put it on a new YouTube video on our YouTube channel, Spaced Out Radio, probably within the next few days. But man, we left there wondering what the heck was going on, because it just seemed like there was things everywhere in the forest last night.
Well, Dave Scott, you're going to play the sounds of the Sasquatch speaking on this show, and then you can put it up on YouTube at Spaced Out Radio. Spaced Out Radio, that's the name of Dave Scott's show, and his website, spacedoutradio.com. And this is Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
My dad, he always asks, every time he sees a gay couple, he'll go, who's the man one? Who's the man one? He'll even do it if it's two men. He'll go, who's the man one with those men? And I had to take him aside. I was like, hey, you got to stop doing that. And he goes, because it's not PC. And I was like, well, take that out of it. At least like 6 out of 10 times, it's visually obvious, okay?
Your heart.
Walmart.
Sterling Shop.
The produce at your neighborhood Walmart is often very seductive. There's nothing more exciting than looking at a package of blueberries or fresh strawberries and wanting to take a little sample. Have a little bite, see how it is. Brian Flanagan learned this was a bad idea at 44 years old. Was in a Walmart in Escambia County in beautiful Pensacola. He found that the blueberries were beyond delectable and started just chowing down. Cops get called, even for blueberry theft. Even if this feller, Mr. Flanagan, was on his way to self-checkout. So he gets busted, the cops search him, they find fentanyl, trafficking amount of fentanyl, possession of some meth, some weed. Is weed still illegal in Florida? Huh. Pretty much legal everywhere else. And possession of drug paraphernalia. Okay, he's on bond now, Mr. Flanagan, for $534,500. He's going to be sitting in the jail for a while unless he has somebody who has a lot of money. A lot of money if it's 10% down, $53,450 or something like that, about 10%. Get you out of there, unless the judge is one of them hanging judges in Florida, and they may want 30% or half of the money down. So he's going to be sitting down there for a little bit. Mr. Flanagan's going to be enjoying the wonderful memory of fresh blueberries, where he is likely not to have those for at least a decade, I'm guessing. Just a guess. Largest corporation in the world, Walmart. They have all these wonderful things that you want to enjoy. Drug dealers, I want to help you out here. Yeah, I'm helping out drug dealers. That's what we do on Sterling Every Damn Night. When you go into Walmart, leave the drugs at home in a safety deposit box, in a safe, or perhaps even in the trunk of your wonderful vehicle. Don't bring them into the store. Very likely, Mr. Flanagan would be free if he had just stolen the blueberries. Once they searched him, they would find, yeah, no meth, no fentanyl, no weed, and no drug paraphernalia. And they go, yeah, you owe the Walmart like $5. Can you pay $5? And he'd be free. Drug dealing is a tough hustle. I certainly know that, and you probably do as well. For the people of Walmart, this is Velo Hool, Sterling Every Damn Night.
Hello, I'm Walter Sterling.
A show is a show, as we all know, but there's one show on the radio that definitely does not blow. It's Sterling Every Damn Night. Turn on the show on your radio. You'll laugh so hard, you'll start to glow. They ought to pay him lots of dough. It's Sterling Every Damn Night.
Dom Giordano, yaks and yaks and waste the time of day. But Walter Sterling never talks unless he has something to say.
So grab some Merlot and put on the show. It won't interfere with your workflow.
It's number one in Buffalo, it's Sterling.
Walter and Sterling, about 25 minutes past the hour, you are a Midnight Misfit. And Bob F., I sent you a kazoo. I will send you another one because you're a good guy, Bob. And Michael Oleksik, Michael O., who's been a great friend, and I mispronounced his last name. Between the new jingles, personal stories, refusing to stop kazooing, humble Harv, Don G., your old man curmudgeon observations, the show is better than ever. But he's only been listening for the past few months. But Michael, I am grateful, and I'm also grateful for something else he did, which I'll tell you about in just a second. And Janine, hello Jean, Janine, who loves Dave Scott, welcome, a Midnight Misfit, Janine P., we have many, many fans here. Stephen P. Hello, Stephen P. How are you? You're in Fairless Hills, Pennsylvania. And let's see, one more. Oh, our friend. Oh, this guy's great. Jay Tux, lawyer dude. Joel. Hello, Joel. Joel, lawyer. Joel. Great notes. Thank you very much. CC Harris, I appreciate the fact that you listen. Lee Harvey, Joel G. Gee. Joel Gee. It'd have to be Gee because otherwise people would make fun of him. Mario R., welcome. These are the Midnight Misfits. If you would like to be a Midnight Misfit and hear your name on national radio, just send me a note. Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. And if you would like a filthy card, it's not pornography, no pictures, it's funny adult cards. Because when you and I go to the drugstore, what do we find? We find cards for 8-year-olds and 80-year-olds. But if you want to send your best friend or a buddy at work a card, well, what are you going to send them? The hearts and flowers with the roses on it? Dear Grandma? No. These are grown-up cards. filthycard.com. You can see them. And if you send me a note, I will actually mail you one. But I got a note tonight from somebody saying, please send me the filthy card. But they didn't give me their real address. I need your real address. Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. Now, lots of great reaction to Dr. David Glasner, superintendent of the Shaker Heights Public Schools. Dr. Glasner has come up with a brilliant way called the Independent Center, the Independent Innovative Center for Education in a public school to help kids who struggle because of the pandemic and to get them on track. If you'd like to get in touch with Dr. Glasner, that's a good idea. And get your school system to do it. glasner_d@shaker.org. Or send me a note and I'll send you the information. How to become likable? Three ways.
And enthusiasm. Let's go through.
How did that happen? Let's try again.
Most likable people have three core traits. They are empathy, authenticity, and enthusiasm. Let's go through the first one, empathy. If you want to master your likability, you must show people that you hear them and that you understand them, even if you don't agree with them. The second one is authenticity. So let's talk about authenticity. And I'm not talking Instagram authentic. I'm saying genuine authenticity. People like people who are comfortable in their own skin. If you are confident and comfortable, others will be attracted to you. Why? Because they will actually trust you. For you to master your likability, be the real you. And the third is enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is a big one. You have got to be enthusiastic. Enthusiasm is infectious. Everybody wants to be around people who radiate positivity. Nobody wants to be around negative Nelly or a Danny Downer. So don't be one of those people.
That's all there is. That's all there is to it. Three things needed to be likable. And I thought I needed a Jaguar. Or a flat stomach. How about you? Or a flat stomach. It turns out that's not what we need. We need to be enthusiastic and pleasant and authentic. Son of a gun. It's that easy. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. If you'd like more information about the Shaker Heights School Innovative Center, send me a note. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. Sterling every damn Sunday. Every damn Sunday.
Saving lips. Just terrible.
Hi, I'm William Devane.
And my friends, it's every damn Sunday from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern. Now, tonight we have a gift. The heavens, your higher power, God, whatever you want to call him, her, is giving us a gift. Tonight is a night where most of North America can see the northern lights. You go outside, find a dark place, golf course, park, edge of a lake, maybe your backyard, quiet, get calm, and look north. And slowly, slowly, the northern lights will reveal. You're not going to go out and see Christmas lights. It's not going to be bright. These are gentle, because I believe nature wants us to find them on our own terms. They want us, nature wants us to see them when we're ready. And if you look north in the sky tonight, right now, you're in an 18-wheeler, you're on 80, 90, pull over. Next break you can take. Pull over, relax, and look to the north. And look for a green curtain. From the horizon to the heavens, look for a green curtain. And it shimmers. It moves slowly, but it doesn't move like anything else you've ever seen. It moves like it is alive. Not like a curtain. Not like, a shower curtain. But it's a curtain of light, but it moves in a way that you believe it's sentient. You believe it has a mind. You believe it's teasing you to look at it. Just look at this. And whenever I look at it, I never forget it. I remember exactly where I was and how special it is and how I really don't have any problems. And my achievements are nice, but really not a big deal, because look at this. Look at this. It is a surreal, ethereal green. It's not a green that you're going to find at the paint store. It's worth the trouble. Go outside. Get calm. Look north. Take a picture of it. Many Midnight Misfits have taken pictures that they have seen. Aviva Vegas have seen and sent them to me, and I appreciate that. My email's waltermsterling@gmail.com. That would be the greatest Sterling snap. You go outside, you look at the northern lights, and take a picture of it. You will never forget this. The first time I saw one, I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it was, because it wasn't like Dad had taken me outside when I was a kid and said, look at these, because that didn't happen where I lived. There was too much ambient light. It was a suburb, horrible, hate suburbs. But when I did see it on a July night, a spectacular, perfect July night, that smelled of aroma, the aroma of flowers and the heat of summer, which is special in itself. It has its own scent. And then to be able to look up and see the colors, the light of summer of this time of year, that was a gift from the universe. Take a moment. Look north. See the northern lights. Worth it. It's worth pulling over. Worth pulling over to see it. And then send it to me. Let me know how you feel about it. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. This is Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sailing every night, the car bar is alive. Neon lights flicker, the patrons talking jive. Bullets over trailer parks under the big Ferrari always gets this guy.
Hey, Walt.
Walter. On this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to talk about the case that started off as a stolen car, what we later found out was a carjacking. Probably about 1994, around Christmas time, and New York City was covered in dark snow. My partner and I were driving around the Fordham Road section in the Bronx, and I ran the plate of a vehicle that had passed. Car came back reported stolen a few days earlier. My partner made a U-turn, and the plan was to block the stolen car in traffic and pull the occupants out. Just as I was about to put it over the radio, a foot pursuit started at the other end of the precinct. I didn't want to go over the radio and step on the foot pursuit, so my partner and I figured we could just handle this ourselves. The plan was to have the vehicle, when it got stuck in traffic behind another vehicle, jump out and pull out the occupants. Sounds good in theory, but what wound up happening is, as we jumped out of the car, the light changed and the vehicle in front moved. My partner and I pulled open the doors, and the two surprised car thieves stared in our faces and stepped on the gas and pulled me and dragged me down the street in the snow. I let go of the vehicle. We jumped back in ours and started chasing the car. What wound up happening is the stolen car T-boned a 4-6 precinct police car. We jumped out and we started running, and we're yelling to the two cops as they're getting out of their damaged vehicle, "That car's stolen, that car's stolen." The two doors open up on the stolen car. I go for the passenger, and on the other side of the car, I hear a crash of glass. I start fighting with the passenger, and I look on the other side of the car, and I see my partner and the 2-4-6 cops doing the tarantella in the snow. I cuff my guy up, and while I stand up, one of the 4-6 cops picks up this hand cannon and goes, "Your partner dropped his gun." I go, "That's not my partner's gun. That's a .357 Magnum." Later at the precinct, I asked my partner what happened, and he says, "When we got out of the car," he says, "the guy jumped out and pointed a gun at me." I go, "Why didn't you shoot him?" He goes, "I was too close. I just pistol whipped him and knocked his head into the glass door." Well, the vehicle was taken in the commission of a carjacking several days earlier. A guy that owned a body shop was taking a customer's car home after work one day, and the two thieves came up to him at gunpoint and told him, "Give me your keys and give me your wallet." The guy complied. As he was about to leave, they go, "Where do you think you're going?" He goes, "What do you want with me? You got my keys, you got the car." He goes, "Get in the back seat." The owner knew that they were going to kill him, that would buy them more time to keep the vehicle. He took off running, and the thieves fired a couple of shots at him with their .357 Magnum. The case went to trial. The driver of the vehicle with the .357 Magnum got 9 to 12 years, and the passenger got 4. So sometimes a stolen car can lead to bigger and better things. For more behind-the-scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Presumption and Dysfunction.
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my book, The Hummingbird and the Hawk. The scent of pine needles permeated the crisp morning air as sunbeams tried to poke through the misty gray clouds floating above the hills. Gavin slid the door shut behind him, rejoining Olivia on the balcony. He picked up a mug from the small round table and filled it with the coffee he'd brought from inside. "Thanks," she said when he passed it to her. "This actually smells pretty good. I can work my magic even with mediocre hotel appliances." After pouring coffee into the second mug, he pulled another wicker chair closer to the table and sat down. "We can grab brunch downstairs at some point before checking out. I don't think traffic will be too bad heading home." She sipped her coffee, then leaned back in her seat against the rough woven cushions. "It's funny. Even when I'm supposed to be on vacation, I always wake up early. I guess some habits are ingrained by now." He smirked behind his mug. "Is this a subtle suggestion that I should have worked harder to wear you out at night?" Her lips pursed together as she bit back a laugh. "Either way, I'm feeling well rested after this trip of ours. And you know by now how much I love a steaming hot cup of coffee first thing in the morning. bed. He adjusted the ties of his robe. Monday will be here before we know it, and I doubt we'll be able to ease into it gently. I don't mind, though. Olivia wrapped her fingers around her mug and stared into its depths. I know I was teasing you a little about this celebratory trip, but I'm glad you convinced me to go. I admit it's been a bit of an adjustment, working in a new office where so many things are approached differently from what I'm used to. Mirroring her posture, he studied her from across the table. From where I'm sitting, you seem to be adjusting just fine. I consider myself lucky that it's been a pretty smooth transition so far. Like I said, though, it's different. The atmosphere, vibes, whatever you want to call it. She glanced sideways at him. While everyone at the firm has been nice about helping me out, I suppose I should thank you for your extra efforts. No need to thank me. Gavin swallowed another mouthful of coffee. I'll state the obvious and say I've enjoyed working with you so far. Her shoulders shook when she snorted out a puff of laughter, and one side of her bathrobe fell open, exposing a wider expanse of bare skin. Maybe I should have been more specific and said, I appreciate your personal guidance on work-related matters whenever you're not trying to screw me. He shifted in his seat. Familiar cravings stirred inside him, and he debated whether to tamp them down. I haven't heard you complain about the last part yet, but as I keep telling you, we're both passionate, ambitious people. We can work hard and play hard, as the saying goes. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and you're listening to an excerpt from my book, The Hummingbird and the Hawk, which is available at Amazon and at thealandon.com. If you'd like to hear some uncensored excerpts, you can go to patreon.com/thealandon, and don't forget, you can share all your deepest thoughts with me at smuttythea@gmail.com. Now, let's keep going. Olivia took a deep breath and let it out slowly. I'm not always great when it comes to vocalizing my feelings, but while I didn't expect to be in this situation with someone like you alongside my career move, I'm satisfied with my decisions. All of them. He was about to offer more dismissive platitudes or change the subject, but as he stared at her messy hair and minimal clothing, a better idea sprang to mind. Why don't you show me then? Her eyebrows shot up. What? Gavin made an exaggerated display of reclining farther in his chair. If you're so grateful to me for the weekend away and introducing you to the better parts of criminal defense and so on, show me. Another burst of laughter erupted from her chest. You've got to be kidding me. Here? Now? Sure, why not? The thought of convincing her to push past her prior limits made him swell beneath his thick cotton robe. It's early in the morning, as we established, and there's no one around. Her eyes widened. There's a courtyard and a path, like, right below us. Someone could come outside at any minute. So, it's not like we're on the first floor. You can thank me again for my love for breathtaking views later. He flashed her his most charming smile. You were talking about all these fresh experiences, the changes in your perception. Why not do something wild and daring to solidify this new version of yourself? Olivia swirled the remnants of her coffee around in her mug.
I hate how you do this to me, she muttered. He leaned to the side in an effort to re-enter her line of sight. I don't believe you. I don't think you hate this at all. The mug clattered against the glass table when she set it down. When she rose from her seat, Gavin half expected her to storm back inside. But she stood in front of him, hands planted on her hips. I suppose I should save my arguments for when they really matter, she said. Since we have to leave soon, we might as well make this celebration memorable. I hope I don't detract too much from the scenic views. She knelt on the floor between his parted legs. Inching forward, she skimmed her hands up his thighs. Despite the heavy fabric of his bathrobe, her provocative touch sent another pulse of arousal straight through him. Part of him couldn't believe he'd convinced her to engage in any salacious activities out on the balcony. But he was determined to savor every second. Nimble fingers loosened the knot at his waist. She pushed aside the two halves of his robe, letting the cool morning air hit his flushed skin. He was ready for her. Olivia's fingertips floated up and down with the faintest pressure. She leaned over, and her lips followed the same path, covering every inch of him with gentle kisses. Her warm breath danced over him. From this position, she was in control. Oh, I think I'd better stop here for tonight, but you know you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my book, The Hummingbird and the Hawk, which is available at Amazon and at thealandon.com. If you'd like to know something,